Hello, this is the Dot Matrix, and I'm Sean.
I'm Justin.
It's good to be back in the West Side.
Yes, this is like twice in a row, or is it almost three
times
in a row?
Three times in a row. Jeez. I'm getting used to the environment in your office here.
Well, you know, it is very orderly.
Your baby blue walls and the Inuit art. And
ocean blue walls, I tried. It's supposed to be this coastal maritime feel to it.
It's great. I like it. Well, you know, it's always sunny in here.
It is. It is. This one does have a good window, which is why it was originally the bedroom, but now it's not the bedroom anymore. So. Right.
I remember when we painted it, and that door, that little door you have, that hobbit door.
The hobbit door, yes. It's an old house, yes, yes.
Although we fit through it, no problem. Right. You and I.
Yeah. Episode 43.
Episode 43, and I think we're well on our way on track to hitting 50 by the end of the year, as we promised.
Yes, I hope so. Because we're just under a month since our last one. So,
which is good.
Which is not bad. Yeah, it was like it was June 9th or something, I think it was. So now it's July 4th. Happy 4th of July to you.
Yes, to all the Americans listening. Thanks, Chris. No, you're not even American, but you're in America, so that counts. But we do have some American friends, and
sure.
We hope they're listening, and we're always encouraging them to listen from down there. So... hope you enjoy this next one. We've got some lots to talk about today and some stuff to follow up on from last episode, which is going to read some poems. And we're going to talk about which movies we bought on Blu-ray. Not Blu-ray. I did. But the sale items at the
Blockbuster. I can't believe we're actually going to do it.
Oh, yeah.
I actually took a picture of the two on my phone, so I didn't have to drag the 40-something DVDs all the way here. So
Well, this is will be a good game because I think the challenge to all the listeners will be, do they recognize any of the titles? And they'll recognize some of them, obviously. But
some of them, yes.
But this is good because this shows that Justin has a varied taste in his cinema.
Sure.
Lots of different categories, things he files under different, you know, different groups and styles. Verite, just
single parent there. Movies, Paul Rudd movies, and
lesbian
cinema.
Yeah, and your lesbian cinema. Who doesn't want a Paul Rudd section? I know I would.
Oh, gosh. And but there's a whole bunch of stuff that has happened since our last podcast. Things like we had a big riot out in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Which I actually don't have that much appetite to talk too much about just because it's been talked about to death.
Kind of overdone.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's nice to navel gaze about why it all happened and all. And, you know, I do have some interesting thoughts on that. But I just actually have no appetite to talk about it. Like, I'm on the... I'm driving, right, and you listen to like news or traffic 7:30 on the radio. So, and they always have these ads from like the company that does the blue fencing, right? Super Save or whatever.
Oh
it's
yeah,
called, right?
Yeah.
And the commercial keeps saying on the radio, you know, thank you, Vancouver Police Chief Jim Chu, and the leadership you showed, and like just always just a narrator with no music and talking about how great the VPD did during the riots, right, and how they, you know, got things under control. And I'm like, yes, I mean, frankly, they do probably get some credit for how they handled it. I do agree they didn't go overkill. Like, you see, like, the G8. I mean, of course, that's a bit different
sure.
because that's, like, you know, much more larger scale and there's a lot more reasons to be protesting.
Yeah.
But, so I appreciate they didn't escalate it the way they probably could have.
Right.
But at the same time, I'm like, really? Do you really have to have a commercial now? How many weeks later? You know, like, just stop it. Like, let's move on. Let's, you know...
let's get on with it. Let the police finish their job and start making more charges. And yeah, I think my only other thought on that whole thing is just, you know, let's really wait and see what happens to these people. Like, you know, they want to get the core group. They want to get those who assisted in the carnage. But I'd be really surprised if they were slapped with some serious offenses, you know? Because a lot of them are going to be like, oh, no prior record and no psycho instability or anything like that.
Right.
But, sorry, I got to sneeze.
Bless you. But, you know, I don't know, like, a lot of the stories that are coming out and the people who are turning themselves in and people who have been outed on the online, you know, right. Like...
It's crazy. It's crazy.
It's kind of crazy what's going on. At the same time, you're also thinking, like, a lot of them are the ones that are getting some coverage are the, you know, the teenagers who just get carried away. And, you know, yes, you should... You have to have some consequences for your actions, but, like... I just...
They're not evil people.
And you make mistakes in life, you know? Yeah, you do. And yes, that water polo player or whatever he was, their image of him trying to light that rag, to light up that police car, yes, he didn't do it because it didn't light and actually he left and someone else, the next person, left. But he was there trying.
Oh.
And you're like...
Which is the same thing.
And you're like, you know... If he had a rational, if he was somewhat thinking rationally, obviously you would not have done that. And you know, we expect a lot of kids these days. And I mean, this is kind of weird. I guess I'm feeling like I'm really old, and I kind of, I guess I am. But you know, like
older.
But like when you're not even, you know, able to drive or whatever, like you can't be expected to have self-restraint. To an exponential degree, you know, like you do when you're 30, 34, you know, or whatever, you know, like it's a completely different time of your life, and you'd hate to have someone's life completely ruined for something really stupid, right?
For one split moment decision.
Yeah, but I mean, we get to balance that with they need justice, and you know, Premier Christy Clark needs her blood.
You saw how I shared her video today.
Yes.
Right? Keeping the citizens up to date on the goings on of BC, which is great. I know what you're thinking. But basically, I think that's true too. And there's something really to be said about this, you know, mob mentality that everyone talks about. And should that be explored more? Because I'm sorry, but not, and this is not to defend all the rioters and the stupid people. There's a lot of stupid people in that group. But there is something to be said for getting caught up in something. I mean, no one can tell me that they've never felt like they've been in a situation where they felt caught up with something that they wanted to be a part of. It's almost like it seems almost like a subconscious thing. Right. Where you're like, you know, there is something to be said about a bunch of people around you, close proximity, and a lot of adrenaline and something. I mean, you'd be lying to say you don't get caught up in that. But there's a difference between those who were like, oh, shit, I'm getting the fuck out of here. And those who are like, oh, this is exciting. I want to be a part of this, right?
Right.
So... You know, it's like that girl who ran out of that store. She's the other one, right? Who's online apologizing. She's saying that, you know, I'm a really good person. I'm ecological. I'm, you know, environmental, all that kind of stuff. Great. But, you know, she's like, well, hey, I mean, it's not unheard of to have the mindset of a lot of the damage has already been done. I just ran in and grabbed another pair of pants or something. Yeah, it's ridiculous, right? When you're sitting back and watching the action on TV, you're just like, really? But you can imagine being in the mind of a younger person being like, hey, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're noticing a lot. And yeah, and it sucks though, because it's a lot of businesses that got raped, you know? Like it's pretty dumb.
Well, it's funny because, like, you know, there's all these videos about context, right? Like, oh, you know, well, we're riding over over hockey and people are riding over liberty and freedom.
Yeah.
And a lot of people posting stuff and that's kind of imagery. And
it made me laugh. Sorry. when I saw that, because it's true, but it made me giggle.
Right. Well, and it made me giggle too, because you're talking about apples and bananas.
That's, like, you know what I mean? That's exactly right.
Because it's like, yes, there are people rioting and protesting for very legitimate, important reasons, and juxtaposing that over the absurdity of rioting over hockey, yes, it's, you know, crazy. But it's not, you can't compare, it's sort of like, it's better if you compare, you know, rioting as happened in Vancouver versus, let's say, rioting at a soccer match, you know, in the UK or,
right,
or, you know, where it happens all the time, right? And you know, you have to say that, like, in comparison to that, we're pretty tame. I mean, yes, we torched cars, and not exactly the best thing, but at least it didn't happen in the arena, you know, like it happens, like, in the stands and,
right,
like, football matches in Europe, and people get, you know, drunken disorderly conduct, and you had to go through a screening process in some places to actually buy tickets to go to a soccer match because they want to screen out all the hooligans that they know of, right? And we haven't come to that stage, you know, like, I'm sure,
yeah,
the guy who was a water polo guy who tried to torch that police car, if he or his parents decide to buy tickets to next season, though, again, they won't deny him the ticket. There's no system in place to do that, right? No,
right.
But things get so out of hand in other countries with other sports that they do, right? So let's just settle down.
Well, you mentioned about the cops, and that's probably the other one last thing I want to say, sure, is that there's been a lot of talk about, was there enough cops? And how come the mayor, Robertson, didn't know exactly how many cops are going out there. I don't know if you agree. You might disagree, but
I disagree. Sorry. Sorry, what?
You just want something to disagree about, so yes, we can get this lively and going. But I actually think that they, you know, people talk about the restraint,
yep,
and all that, and I think that's so key to this, yep, because of how many people there are. If there was cops in the thousands, say, like a couple thousand or more, I think that could have had a opposite effect of what we would desire, right? It's so easy to say afterwards, should have had more cops, how come we didn't know how many cops? But considering that they were looking out for people first, before property, they went in there, they had their tear gas, they had their big
shields
and stuff. I think that they thought about this, and I think, you know, they had a good number of cops, some figures say 800 or something, but I think they did what they could without causing a G20 thing.
Yes.
And I think that's so important to remember here. It's, yep, like, if you have millions of cops out there, that also increases chance of,
sure,
hostility and people, you know, because you just see those people, how they're talking to how they're screaming at the cops and being all in their face and stuff and just being stupid, right?
Right.
When they should be just getting out of the way. I think that they did a good job, and if Robertson didn't know how many cops was going to be out there the moment it happened, oh well, right, you know, I don't think that's actually such a, yeah, big deal.
Well, I think then you start to have a comparison between, let's say, what's going on in other countries when they protest about civil liberties and that sort of stuff, because I think you're right. That's what my thing was, that I'd rather it happen and it take 3 hours to calm the crowd down or whatever, how long, right, it takes, and having some property damage because the law enforcement is giving the crowd the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
The opportunity to disperse.
Yeah.
The time to disperse and to just go home, as opposed to cracking it down and trumping on a whole bunch of civil liberties or your ability to,
that's
just,
right,
walk in your city and be wherever you want to be and lock you up for no reason just because they think you might smash a window or something, right?
Right.
And so I'd rather that happen the way it did than just crack down much too heavily. But yeah, no, it was an interesting, and of course the whole thing about hockey and the Stanley Cup totally just gets whitewashed from the whole thing because we talk about the riot, right? So I was thinking about, like, a couple things that came to my mind when I was watching it, because, you know, I was there as you were, you and Elaine were there, we didn't quite meet up as we were hoping to, and then ended up going back and watching it at a ramen restaurant here, which is kind of cool, right. But you know, we watched the third period, and you know, Boston wins the Stanley Cup, and they hold the they hoist the Stanley Cup, right? Mm-hmm. The Boston captain, who's Zdeno Chara from Czech Republic or somewhere in Eastern Europe, right?
Right.
And the commentator goes, "Now look how happy he is." You know, people say Europeans don't love the game as much as, but look at his face. He's so happy. And I'm like, whoa, like that is, there's a lot of racism in that sentence, right? Like, huh. You know, and there's a lot, like, you think about, like, Don Cherry, who always talks about Canadian players are always the best, and he has been, you know, criticized as being racist in that sort of sense. And you think about, you know, so I thought that was kind of an interesting statement, made me think about sort of that there is a, professional sports still allows for stuff in culture, in society, that you don't normally would have today because we've progressed more, right? Like,
right.
Like to say, like, oh, well, you know, I just think a whole brand of people aren't as into the Stanley Cup or winning Stanley Cup as Canadians do just because they're from that country, right? Like, it's kind of crazy.
Or even that continent.
That continent. It's crazy.
Interesting, yeah.
And the whole thing about sort of... just, you know, that aside, just the comment that he was just so happy. You could see how, there is sort of something very symbolic in that trophy, right? It's really big. It's really historic. Mm-hmm. You get your name on it. And it just reminds, like, of all cultures, there's always, sometimes, I mean, people think you don't want to be materialistic, right? You don't want to have a lot of stuff. You don't want to hoard. And, of course, being here in my office isn't a good example of that, since I have a lot of stuff piling around. But, you know, but I think there is something about that that most cultures have, right? Like, either it's a temple, or it's a chalice, or it's a cross, or whatever it is, right? Like, humanity always puts a lot of emotional meaning or emotional value on stuff. And the Stanley Cup's no different. And that's okay, you know? Like,
yeah, sure.
That's okay. It's not an awful thing. So it made me think about that when you sort of see them lifting the cup and all.
It's interesting, yeah.
And then the whole thing about Gary Bettman and the fans in Vancouver booing him, right? And they say, oh, that's no respect for the cup because you're booing, you know, Gary Bettman. He's trying to present the cup because it is an important thing. You don't want to ruin it for the Boston Bruins, who have actually worked so hard to win this cup.
Sure.
And I don't disagree with that, but at the same time, I'm like, so you're sort of attaching it to the whole symbolism stuff, right? So I get that. But at the same time, grow up, you know, like they didn't boo when they got the trophy.
They booed the guy.
They booed the guy right up until the point where he gave it. So I think the crowd knew the line, and maybe the line was a little bit too far for some commentators, but right. But for just a normal person, I think it's okay. And someone, a hockey fan who, and you know, Vanessa is a big believer in this conspiracy theory that Gary Bettman hates Canada and hates Canadians and doesn't want, you know, and that sort of stuff. And it just made me think about, there's a real problem. Like, this guy has been the head, you know, the commissioner of the National Hockey League for, what, 10, 15 years or something?
Seems, yeah.
And to have a whole nation where that sport is the highest sport of all the other professional sports, you have the guy who leads it hated by the majority of the country. That's a problem for the league, you know. At some point, like, they have to rectify that, you know.
Interesting.
Either he has to get fired, or he has to, you know, at some point when he resigns, they really do have to bring in someone who Canadians could respect again, because I think it's just too late. Like, unless
damage is done.
His damage is done. I mean, he brought the NHL back to Winnipeg, and still he gets booed in Vancouver, right? Like,
it's funny, huh?
So I just made me think about this is just a big problem here. I mean, this is kind of funny to talk about, like, booing the commissioner, but, like, it's not good. Like, if your commissioner is hated by a country, it's not good.
Yeah, I've never heard anything positive about that guy. I don't know much about him. But that's all known. That's all good. Yeah. We got that all out.
Yeah,
it only took 20 minutes.
I know. Jeez. oh gosh,
yeah. What else has been going on in the world?
Well, I posted a link on my Facebook. I don't know if you saw it, but about Stephen Colbert and going to the Federal Election Commission, the FEC. About, you know how in the States you can start up all these political action committees, like the PAC, right?
Okay,
and you can collect a whole bunch of donations and then run ads against candidates or for candidates.
Sure.
And it's basically anonymous donations, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, but But Stephen Colbert went to the FEC and asked about, you know, if he started a pact and he promoted it on his show, would Viacom, the parent company of Comedy Central, have to disclose the value of those resources that went into putting the show on, because it's a donation to that pack, right?
Okay.
And then they simplified the whole thing about basically whether the FEC would let Stephen Colbert have a super pack, right? And so they said yes, and so now he's starting this whole political action committee, Stephen Colbert.
No.
And he's starting to take donations, and his little video that I posted on my Facebook about his announcement, and it is so hilarious.
Oh, I have to see it.
And I just, like, that guy has totally made that satirical caricature so perfect. Like, he's actually, you know, a fictional version of himself in reality goes to a real body, like the Federal Elections Commission, and is starting. So it's like this weird blur
of
fiction and real, and satire in the real context, right? Like, it's just, that's so cool. I
have to post a link to that.
I can't wait to see how it unfolds, and whether or not he can amass a whole bunch of millions of dollars in donations and just try to, whatever he does with it, right? Who knows, right? So, yeah. So that was kind of cool.
Wow. Yeah, there's a whole, I'm kind of surprised that it took this long for the Republican side of things to kind of start heating up for next year's election.
Yes.
Because by this time in 2007, like the year before 08,
right,
they were already getting way closer to figuring out who's going to get the nomination, like the front runners, right. So yeah, it'll
there's
be
Michelle Bachmann.
She, the Tea Party leader, threw her hat in the ring, and
did you
she's
see,
freaky, man.
Did you see that whole thing about, like, I just couldn't stop laughing when they kept, she said, you know, she was in, wherever she was, I guess,
she was in Iowa, wasn't
Iowa,
she?
Right, and then she said,
she's,
you know, I'm, you know, from here, and so is John Wayne, and I have the spirit of John Wayne, because John Wayne was born in this town.
Oh my God.
And actually, it was wrong, because John Wayne was born in a town, the actor John Wayne was born in a town, like, hundreds of miles away, like, a different town, but the John Wayne that actually was born in that town that she was talking about, which is, I guess, where she grew up, is John Wayne Gacy, the masked serial killer.
Wow, when they get it wrong, they really get it wrong, huh?
God. Oh, I couldn't believe it. It's too funny.
It's just, you know, one after the other, you name a Republican or, you know, conservative, you know, that side of the fence, you know, some big name leader or whatever, and they, like Huckabee talking about Obama being born in Kenyan, in Kenya, like being there until his early adulthood, like just easy checkable facts that are wrong, you know, and right. And they all do it, and she's doing it now, you know, like,
oh, and do you see here this morning about Twitter, about the
Fox News
Twitter, someone hacked it and said the Obama had been assassinated.
God, see, that's scary, because, you know, a lot of people have said, oh, you know, like, that could happen, you know?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it could happen to any president, but it's a little more heightened, I think, with Obama, obviously, because of the whole race issue that some people obviously would still have a problem with down there. But that's freaky. But I actually saw some of those posts. They were kind of funny. Like,
right. Yeah, I mean, I've read an article in the New York Times, and it was like, yeah, you can tell, like, the tense was all wrong, and it was kind of weird, you know?
Just, you know, idiots, you know, they're smart technology-wise, but they're idiots in every other way, these hackers, right?
You know, and actually what it made me think about is sort of Twitter and, like, you know, how still very, although now a lot of people are starting to get onto it, and it's still a fairly nascent new thing, right? And
I still don't totally get it, but yeah.
and, you know, like, think about, like, how much that one tweet probably just got retweeted over and over again, and it just spread like wildfire, and then, you know, the White House has to do a statement, or Fox News do a statement saying, no, that's totally false, and there's no, you know, and when you have 140 characters, how much can you quote without, you know, substantiating it, right? Like, you can, because you have 140 characters, right? And I just think about sort of, like, you know, in some way, people talk about Twitter and social media during the Vancouver riots. You know, everyone started taking pictures and posting it on Facebook and all the stuff about the, you know, mob mentality and stuff. But I think also, like, at the time, you know, I think, you know, if someone tweets, oh, you know, I'm torching a car here, and then, you know, and there's a picture, oh, wow, I'm going to go over there now and see what's going on, and let's torch another car, you know, or whatever. Like, how it could spread really quickly, and what may seem like just this one incident ends up being five or six things just because it spreads really crazy, right?
Yeah.
And it just reminds me, like, about, it's sort of like, you know, playing telephone back in the day, you know, where you whisper something to someone's ear and then, like, eventually it gets back to you. It's so different, right?
That's right.
Like, I don't know. I mean, not exactly like that, but just how things spread so quickly and you don't take a, the medium doesn't allow for it to kind of go, whoa, wait a second. Mm-hmm. Is this real? Mm-hmm. So there's a, it had the medium hasn't matured enough for people to kind of go, okay, now let's just wait a second.
And I wonder if it ever will, though, because
it's not designed to, I don't know.
Exactly. And I don't know if they could make it smart enough. Like, you know, they talk about like smart computers or robots or whatever. It's like, I don't know if it'll ever be that intelligent enough to be able to control that type of thing. If it's going to be ultimately free, if you're going to be able to post freely every time, how is that ever going to be checked? Right. Actually, Tony Clement, one of our favorite members of parliament, and yours too, I'm sure.
Oh, I love that guy.
He caught a little fire for tweeting a picture of the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge.
Oh, really?
William and Kate. Because he's the biggest tweeter of all members of parliament, right? Like, okay. Just constantly tweeting. So he took a little grainy little picture.
Sure.
Last night of, or the night before, of William, the from behind William and Kate.
Okay.
Looking at the fireworks from behind the parliament buildings. Looking
okay,
the,
sure.
The river. And it's just all, I mean, you can tell it's them because of, you know, they're obviously there, and it's, right. I think it came from that reception that John Baird was holding. God. Well, we won't even talk about that guy, but, so he takes this little snap and posts it on Twitter. It's like, oh, look at, you know, they're watching the, you know, a lot of, and some people are like, oh yeah, big deal, but other people were like, you know, wait a second, like, their environment's very strictly controlled, you know?
Right.
And of all people, why is a member of parliament sneaking up, taking a little pic like a paparazzi?
Right, and a minister.
A minister, right? So, you know, and his response is like, you know, if it was mountain or molehill, I say molehill. You know, like, this is not a big deal. And maybe it's not. Oh, something. Sound like someone turned off.
No,
your drive. So.
Don't worry about it.
You know, a lot of people are like, oh, well, like, what is he do? Like, you know, is that appropriate? Or, you know, but other people are like, wait a second, like, it's kind of like a party. They're there with everybody. They're getting a million pictures taken them anyway on this trip.
Right.
But I think it's the fact that it was unbeknownst to them, you know, like, in a way, like, they were supposed to be sharing kind of a private moment.
Sure.
I think that's
okay.
What it got. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
So.
See, I don't know what I feel about that. Like, I'm not terribly offended. At the same time, I can see how people could get, you know, get up and ends about it. But I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it's something to get, like, overreactive about. Yeah. I just found it kind of funny because he seems like a little weasel that way, you know, like a little twerp. I don't know.
Well, it's funny because one thing I noticed during this whole Wills and Kate tour, whatever they're calling it, right?
Yeah. Wills and Kate.
Well, I only saw very briefly, and I don't know, like, I didn't watch all the coverage in Canada Day, but, you know, they had them on the stage during the afternoon show in Ottawa, right?
Oh,
on,
yeah.
And there's the governor, at some point, I guess, people were cheering for them, and the governor general stands up and claps, he gives him a standing ovation and claps towards them, right? And he's wearing sunglasses and all, and I'm like, and like, my first reaction was, whoa, wait a second. You're the governor general. When the queen is not in Canada, you represent the queen. So theoretically, you outrank Prince William or the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. So why are you giving them a standing ovation? Like, in theory, they should be giving you a standing ovation or bowing to you because you represent the queen.
Mom. Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so I don't know why, like, it just kind of made me feel like he was a little bit of a sycophant, you know? Like, and I mean, I just saw it very quickly on television.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, I mean, it's like when they arrived and they were, you know, inspecting the troops or something, right? And it's not Prince William who does it. It's the Governor General, because he is in charge of the armed forces when the Queen is not in Canada, right? Sure. So I don't know. My sense was, like, I mean, maybe, you know, yes, I mean, he is more popular and whatever, but really, standing up and giving a standing ovation?
That's, like, weird.
That's weird.
It's like he was starstruck.
I know, and I'm like, you're the Governor General. Like,
tone it down.
Yeah, I was surprised.
The Queen doesn't stand up and give standing ovations for anyone.
Yeah, I know. It was just very weird. I mean, the guy is doing some great work and promoting things like volunteerism quite well. So, I mean, I don't want to criticize the guy, but I just thought that was a weird thing to do.
That's funny.
It's just weird.
Huh. Well, you know, a lot of people have different thoughts on that whole setup, right? Like the Governor General and...
Right.
Do we continue with that whole kind of charade? You know what? I think it, you know, sets us apart from a lot of other countries, you know, that aren't in the Commonwealth. And I think it's kind of a cool club to be in. I don't... Elaine calls me a monarchist, so I don't know. Maybe I am, but...
Well, I just think... I mean, we've talked... Maybe... I think we've even talked about this in a podcast, but, yeah, like, early on. But I totally think it's fine. I think, you know...
Give some meaning, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, it's a symbolism thing,
yeah,
right? And,
yeah.
And two, I much rather the Governor General give out all those awards that mean a lot of stuff to a lot of people, like the Order of Canada and stuff, and let, you know, do all the ceremonial stuff, and let the Prime Minister... When he wants to work, you know?
Right.
Not like the President of the United States, who does everything, and everything is on that one guy.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there watching the Kennedy Center Awards, right, sitting there celebrating Motown on the west, on the south
crazy,
lawn,
huh?
And then he's bombing, you know, Middle East countries and assassinating, you know,
like militants, you know, and leaders. Yeah. And, yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. I mean, he's got better things to do than to sit. And as much as I love the Kennedy Center Honors and I think, you know, they're doing good stuff, he doesn't need to be sitting there and doing that stuff, right?
Like... No, I totally agree. I totally agree.
Shall we get to, like, the stuff that we were talking that we would probably do,
yeah,
which was poetry?
Yeah, well, let's...
Let's give it some context. So
let's do some poems, and then we can talk movies after that.
Sure, and then sort of wrap it up, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Because you've got two, I have one.
Okay.
And I figure you could start, because I know you've got an affinity to poetry that I haven't quite grasped yet. So I'd rather you start.
Sure.
To set the tone.
Yeah, sure.
So what poem? What's the first poem you want to recite and tell us? Everyone,
all the listeners,
a little bit about it and why you want to, why what's this is important to you.
Well, there's a few things about why it was important to me, because, well, the first one is because this is a Robert Bly poem, and
are they both
here
from Robert?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I did two from him, just two different ones, not from the same period. And because this came from the Bill Moyers show, which sadly is no longer, but it's like the best show pretty much ever,
yeah,
of all time. I honestly mean that. When looking back on it, like it's entertaining, it's informative, it's meaningful, and it's from that meaningfulness that when he was on there reading this poem, I took. One of the poems I took from that episode of his show, because he read it, and it was one that Bill Moyers asked him to read.
Mm. And that's where mine comes from too, right? That whole thing. So,
exactly.
Anyways, yeah.
So that's what, cool. You know, and we touched on that last time. That's what we're drawing from. So I thought, you know, I'll take that one, because when I was listening to the episode on my iPod, I was, you know, it was dark. I was listening. I had my eyes closed. I really got captivated by it.
Sure.
Although I'm never a big literature guy, in the sense that I don't always understand poems, but sometimes if they just flow right, I like it.
So what's the name of this? What's the title of this particular first one?
So the first one's called After Drinking All Night with a Friend.
Okay. So you want to just read it maybe, and then we'll talk about it?
Yeah. Why don't I just read it, and then we'll kind of see what we think. So here it goes. These pines, these fall oaks, these rocks... This water, dark, and touched by wind. I am like you, your dark boat, drifting over waters fed by cool springs. Beneath the water since I was a boy, I have dreamt of strange and dark treasures. Not of gold or strange stones, but the true gift beneath the pale lakes of Minnesota. This morning, also drifting in the dawn wind, I sense my hands and my shoes and this ink. Drifting as all of the body drifts above the clouds of the flesh and the stone, a few friendships, a few dawns, a few glimpses of grass, a few oars wetted by the snow and the heat. So we drift toward shore over cold water, no longer caring if we drift or go straight. So that's that poem.
Okay, so why?
Why do I like it?
Yeah.
Well, because it was written about a place in Minnesota, obviously. He was from Minnesota.
Okay.
He wrote it after literally drinking all night with a friend, a fellow poet, as far as my understanding is.
Okay.
So I like the kind of the spontaneity of it. You know, it's just like, you know, what do we all do in an evening? You know, we might watch TV, we might go to a movie, we might go do this, we might go do that. Well, he would go drinking with a friend and write about whatever came to mind. And it turned out to be something, you know, there's a lot of nature in it. There's a lot of just like that kind of nostalgia aspect that I really like. So that's what I like in poetry anyway, is when people talk about maybe their youth or places they came from. So I just thought he had a really nice way of kind of describing that. And he gets kind of real kind of surreal images, like being underwater, talking to a boat. You know, just, it almost sounds kind of Walt Whitman a bit because of just kind of, it's not hard concepts, but it's things that kind of affect everybody, like nature, things around you, just little things people notice that are kind of everyday things that don't have to be a big deal.
Right.
But in a moment when you're kind of clear in the head, you're, they can kind of seem, kind of impactful or meaningful. So that's that first one. And I kind of got a buzz off it when he read it on the show, so I thought I'd read it here.
Well, you know what I like about it too is that there's that there's a an interesting disconnect between the title and the contents of the poem, which I thought was really this. I was thinking about the title, and then as you were reading, I was thinking, okay, this has nothing to do about the drinking, about, you know, and I find that this, I find that really interesting. It's sort of like, you know, a lot of times you can be inspired by something. By, let's say, a beautiful woman or a beautiful experience, and you write, I mean, that's your muse, and you write about that experience or that beautiful person.
Right.
And that's what you write about. But this is different. This is sort of like being completely inspired by having a great interaction with an old friend over drinks, and then you're actually writing about the high that comes from that.
Right.
And then it's not about that, but it's about the high, and you're he's sort of riding that really great, either happy moment, full of nostalgia, whatever, and he's talking about that. Not about the drinks, not about where that inspiration came from, but just talking specifically about the inspiration and letting it just drive whatever he writes. Yeah. So I find that really fascinating. It's like it's a completely different way of thinking about titles and content.
I hadn't
thought about that.
I totally agree, because you know, you think of drinking all night with a friend, and you think, oh, it's going to be some, you know, kind of way out there, kind of like Rambo, like, oh, you know, kind of extreme or kind of fringe kind of way of thinking, you know?
Right.
But I'm glad you noticed that. That's really cool. So that's that one. So, and you can read yours next then, because you also have a poet from, that we discovered through Bill Moyers, correct?
Yes, yeah. And we talked a little bit about it the last podcast. So it is, you know, Choices by Nikki Giovanni. And I just, it was like you said, just listening to Bill Moyers, and, you know, he takes such care inviting people onto his show, and the conversations he has. And just when I first, I think I heard this poem first a couple years ago when it first came on the broadcast, and I was listening to it on my iPod on SkyTrain on the way to Surrey.
Wow.
And an early morning, I was out there doing some workshops, and I was like probably like 7:30 in the morning or 8, you know, like very early in the morning, and I heard this, and not just the poem, but the whole conversation, and just how
right.
how rich her perspective was on the world, and how influenced it was on just her experiences and what she's learned, and this poem was just an encapsulation of, I think, to me, is about the uniqueness of being a human being, you know?
Right.
So maybe I'll just read it.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And so, okay. Choices. If I can't do what I want to do, then it's my job not to do what I don't want to do. It's not the same thing, but it's the best I can do. If I can't have what I want, then my job is to want what I've got and be satisfied at least there is something more to want. Since I can't go where I need to go, then I must go where the signs point, though always understanding parallel movement isn't lateral. When I can't express what I really feel, I practice feeling what I can express. And none of it is equal, I know, but that's why mankind, alone among the animals, learns to cry.
Nice. Excellent. Well, I like the sound of that one, too.
And I just, it's just, you know, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking about sort of, when I first heard this, I was thinking in many ways about your affinity to poetry and thinking about the written word and the extra care and insight it takes to choose your words carefully.
Totally.
You know, and she says so much in what is probably very few words. I mean, it's a very short poem that I've taken all my life to understand, you know, and even though now I'm only just starting to learn those lessons and starting to understand what they mean, but I just love that it's called, like, you think about, like, title, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I love the fact that she calls it choices, because she's talking about, if you don't get what you want, you have to choose another way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a choice, but all at the same time, they're not really choices. You kind of have to do it, because you can't always get what you want. You can't always be, you know. And so I love how it's called choices, but in many ways, a lot of what she talks about is what you have to do when you have no choice. So right. I find that was fascinating.
Yeah, and I actually really like the rhythm of that poem.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not like four lines, four lines, four lines, like this one was, except for one stanza, which was kind of interesting. But that... she's explaining like a thought and almost saying it in two different ways per every thought, which I thought was kind of cool.
You're right. The structure is so, no one can really see it except for you because you're sitting here right next to me, but I had to sort of write dashes on where I think there needed to be spaces and lines right. that should have put it together because it's, you know, and, but it has a very interesting rhythm to it. And the way it looks on paper is not how at least it was read, at least when she read it on the show, and I tried to read it in that same sort of way.
Sure.
But, you know, I find it, like, it says a lot about grace, a lot about, you know, how do you, you know, when you know, and you know enough about life to know that it isn't always going to be exactly how you want it, and how you deal with it with grace and dignity says a lot about who you are as a person. So I love that about this poem, and it shows about adaptation and about survival and all those things that for me is very important about my life and where I've gone in the last number of years and where I think, you know, we all have to go as we get, you know, as I've been saying lately, into the middle stages of our lives.
Oh my
Sorry.
God.
But, you know, these things start to pop up more, right? Like
they do.
Having to deal with things that we didn't necessarily want to have to deal with, or we start to realize, you know, the complexities of life that make things that are simple not so simple, and how it's a joy when you can drill it down back to the simplicity. And sometimes as you get older, you're for some reason humanity, the human condition doesn't allow us to make it simple, right?
Yes, true.
So I just love how all that complicated stuff and all that sort of, in many ways, baggage of life and of being in the human condition is put in a way that is so still very beautiful and in the end, how it's read, and how the rhythm is, it actually is kind of hopeful. Like, I don't know, yeah. Like, there's a little bit of hopefulness in that.
Yeah.
After all of that being said, you know, and I think that's just the beauty of being a human being. It's all these things all together. Anyway, that's why I chose that one.
Well, that's really cool because it made me think of that episode because it was recent when I discovered it, and there's that line where she's talking about if it's not the job I want, then it's my job to. What did she say? Want that job, or it's my job to?
Yeah, if I can't have what
I've got,
then my job is to want what I've got.
And I think,
yeah,
I'm like, wow, just like that covers so much ground, like right there.
Yeah.
And she was talking a lot about post 9/11.
Yes.
And she was saying, you know, it's important for people to know that they can feel hurt.
Yeah.
You know, because we're always told, oh, you gotta man up, or you gotta put up a brave face, or, you know, but it's
right.
We kind of got out of the pattern of showing vulnerability, and I think that's just screams out in some of those areas there. So that's really cool. That's a great poem.
Cool.
So yeah,
so what's your second one?
Yeah. I had another one here. I you know, I looked through some of his works online because he's an older guy. I mean, he's 85 this year. He's one of America's, you know, best known living poets.
Mm.
So I thought, well, let me just take a poem from a different era, and I can't actually remember which era this comes from, but
earlier in his career or later, like, is the one that you read earlier the first, was that a more recent poem, or
I think this is even earlier.
Okay.
I think this dates from the 60s, but I will double check that. Okay, so this one is called Solitude Late at Nights in the Woods. The body is like a November birch facing the full moon and reaching into the cold heavens. In these trees, there is no ambition, no sodden body, no leaves. Nothing but bare trunks climbing like cold fire. My last walk in the trees has come. At dawn, I must return to the trapped fields, to the obedient earth. The trees shall be reaching all the winter. It is a joy to walk in the bare woods. The moonlight is not broken by the heavy leaves. The leaves are down and touching the soaked earth, giving off the odor that partridges love. So that's, again, it's even shorter than the first one. And it's not unlike the first one in some ways, because he's describing a lot of elements, you know, like earthy kind of elements. Sure. And stuff, which I've always kind of dug. Like, one of my favorite poets is Wordsworth, and I mean, he's got billions and billions of poems that they all kind of relate to just being out with nature and trying to maybe relate just the random kind of wonderfulness of the outdoors with, like, the heavens. Or he's obviously very religious, and I'm not religious, but I still kind of, like, when he talks about the heavens here, he's not probably mentioning that in a very specifically Christian way, but right. It's just a way to describe something celestial, right?
Sure.
Which I really dig. So I was looking through, and I really just like the imagery of it. And for me, imagery is kind of number one when thinking of poems. I go for more the aesthetic feel or atmosphere of it. So yeah,
what I like about really this one is that, like, it I find fascinating because it in comparison to how you chose both of those, right? It's so interesting because both of them have a definitely a descriptive sense of nature on both of them.
Yeah.
But the first one you read, you know, like we say, it's just a lot about just all the different things that come into his mind after having that wonderful experience and that wonderful connection with a friend.
Right.
And this one is very much like, okay, I'm there. I'm hearing what you like when you're like, I'm okay, I can feel the damp leaves underneath my feet, you know, walking and just Like, it's just so interestingly, you know, in juxtaposing the two poems together, right? Like it's sort of a randomness, like, wow, I'm sort of like, the first one's sort of like the riots, right? You know, like,
yeah.
Swept up in all the energy, and you just describe a whole bunch of stuff. And this one is very much deliberate, and it's very much, this is where I am, I want to tell you about it, and this is exactly everything I see, you know? And so it's so different. Like, it's really interesting.
Yeah, awesome.
Cool. Well,
I'm glad you enjoy those. Neat. So hopefully people there will be into whenever we do this. I think we should do it again sometime, and I think you know, we can incorporate all kinds of you know, different cultural aspects, but instead of, you know, being so curmudgeon-y about politics and current affairs and stuff, but I think that was a lot of fun to do, and you know, there are other poets that Bill Moyers just had on, like war veteran poets.
Yeah, you that know? Was you.
That was a really good
when
one.
That we first came that. On. You said you listened to it first, and I was like, and I hadn't listened to it yet, and you were so taken by it. I listened to it afterwards, and I was just was amazing. Cool. Really, really, I gotta listen to that one again.
You know, and it just goes to show, like, there's always been people have written about, in not just poetry, but for all kinds of prose about war and, you know, just awful things like that, but have come out of it real beauty, you know?
Right.
So I think that was something that maybe we'll pull out soon.
Cool. And I really liked it. I was glad we did this because, well, you're right. I mean, not that we're necessarily curmudgeon-y, but it's nice to talk about stuff that just inspires, you know? It just, it's a different energy to the conversation. So that's
yeah,
cool.
Absolutely. Cool.
So I think we should probably end it by talking about the movies.
Yeah, sure.
We said we would. So maybe you should go first. And what movies did you get?
Well, I only bought three because I had way more of a filter than you did. But
I mean, you didn't say, "Oh, I've heard of this actress." Sure.
You know, I was really my whole way of going about it. When I think, because you told us about this, right? Like, that's why we went. Did we hear from you, or did Elaine find
I think
it
maybe or... Elaine heard about, you know, and just for those of you who hadn't listened to our last podcast, you know, Blockbuster in Canada went bankrupt, and they were just liquidating all of their DVDs and movies, and so you only went the one or two times, did you go? Like,
I think, well, I
went six different times to three different locations.
Yeah, we did. I think, you know, I heard about the one at Oak Street closing, so, because not all of them are closing, to be clear.
Yeah.
It's just several in each city or something, and so here in Vancouver, there's four stores, and I went to the Oak one and with Elaine, and I thought, okay, you know, I just want to beef up my Blu-ray collection, so
yep.
They must have some movies on sale that I've maybe seen a bunch of times. I've always wanted to get the nice crisp picture, you know.
Sure.
And so we went, and I only came away with three.
Amateur.
Well, and the other difference is because you kept going days and days later when they were lowering the price even more, sure. Even more.
Yep, yep.
Thinking, and hey, why not? Because you actually still found a bunch of things. And you found a lot more stuff that I even think I saw. Like, I don't even remember seeing some of those titles. So the three that I bought was one I'm really excited about that I saw in the theater, and I know you really like it, is The Kids Are All Right.
Yes, that's great. I love that movie.
So, excuse me. So that just came out just this, like, within the last half a year. So,
and I would have picked that one up too, but I hadn't already bought it from HMV like a month earlier.
Right, so you already got that.
Yeah, Annette Bening robbed of her Oscar, but anyways.
That... I know. What is a woman supposed to do to win an Oscar, huh?
Like, jeez.
Wow.
I'm, yeah. Anyways, okay, that was one.
So that's one. And then the second one is Eternal Sunshine.
Yes. Great, great movie.
Right? I haven't seen it since it came out. I think we saw it when it went to video, the first, after theaters, and I saw it, and I liked it, and I was like, okay. Kirsten Dunst, another of my favorite actresses in it.
Yes.
Very excited to see that.
Very nice dimples. Sorry, that's for Tara if she ever listens to this.
Okay, we'll have to ask her. Did you hear Justin's dimple comment? And then the third one was Love Actually. Which, as you know, I watch every Christmas with Elaine. I'm big for Christmas spirit, so just week leading up during our holidays, I always watch it, and now I have it on Blu-ray, so I'm very excited.
Nice. Do you have it on? Did you have it on DVD beforehand, and then you now have it on Blu-ray?
No.
Oh, you don't have it at all.
We had it downloaded.
Oh, okay.
From a long time ago, and it was pretty good quality too. Yeah. But I'm a total fan of that movie. I think it's one of those, you know, popular movies. Like,
oh, sure.
A lot of people love it, but I think critically, I think I would dare say it was underrated.
Yeah, no, I many of those storylines were really, like, to me, they worked really well together, and they did sort of say things a lot. Like, Emma Thompson was brilliant in that, and when she was crying and listening to Joni Mitchell, my God, that was so brilliant.
And what a perfect song.
Oh, God, yeah.
Which is the modern version of Both Sides Now.
Yeah, I'm on the DVD, because I have the DVD from a while ago, and they have a special feature, and they talk about the movie, the music selection, and Richard Curtis is talking about how, why he chose this particular version, right? And just juxtaposing the exact same song from the exact same artist, sung and performed early in her career, what that lyric, how you interpret that lyric, those lyrics, to how you interpret the lyrics later with a more oaky voice that she has now. And it sounds much more hopeful in the original, and so much about life, just, you know, wearing you down in some ways.
Totally.
You know, and so it's just how the exact same song can mean so totally different things. I just thought that was really fascinating. So,
well, I don't think I even seen those, because we didn't have any bonus features of the download. So
right,
that'll be really interesting.
Yeah, you
to
should.
Watch.
Yeah, it's probably in the Blu-ray.
Cool. So on to yours.
So I had to take, like I said, took two pictures, and let me just see what I got. So okay, let's look at the first. Well, that's my picture of my leftover tagliatelle. Okay, so I have a whole bunch of movies. I'll just go through them really quickly, and maybe I'll point to ones that I think, just for some reason, if they're good or not.
Sure.
Cinema Paradiso, which is a foreign film from back in 1989, I think it is.
Yeah.
And the Hollywood Theater, which is just around the corner from here, when it shut down, that was the last movie they showed.
I saw that. Cool.
And I hadn't seen it until then, and it was so good. Right. It's really good. Inside Man, mm-hmm. That's the one with Denzel Washington, the Spike Lee movie, and
I think I saw that.
Clive Owen, like, they rob a bank kind of thing.
Right, yep.
It was good.
It was pretty good.
Yeah. The Station Agent I thought was really good. I can't really describe what it's about, but it's a good movie. You Will Meet a Tall, Dark Stranger, that's the Woody Allen movie with Antonio Banderas, Naomi Watts. and actually it was pretty good. I thought it was okay. And Anthony Hopkins is in it, and he plays the Woody Allen type character.
Okay. Does he do it okay?
He does it okay, actually. I mean, he's not terribly stuttery, but he sort of has a midlife crisis, divorces Naomi Watts's mother. Naomi Watts's father in this movie.
Okay.
And then ends up marrying, basically a prostitute. and the actress who plays the prostitute is so funny. Like, she doesn't have enough lines, but she's very good.
Cool.
Speaking of Naomi Watts, I picked up Fair Game with her and Sean Penn.
Okay.
And that's the one where there's the Valerie Plame, and, you know,
it's the
movie
that.
About that. So, got that one.
Okay.
Make It Happen, and that's one of the movies where it's about, it's just because I knew the actress, she was in Scott Pilgrim, like, she was the
lovers
in Scott Pilgrim, and she was also in Death Proof.
Okay.
And I just thought, oh, she's pretty cute. And then this is a movie. Why not?
Right on. Cool.
Mad Hot Ballroom, which is actually an interesting documentary about New York City elementary school kids who through school learn to ballroom dance. And it's, you know, it's really, I saw it on TV. It's really good.
Cool. I heard of that. Yeah.
Red.
Yeah.
Salt.
Yeah.
How to Rob a Bank. Don't ask me why. The Good German.
Okay.
With George Clooney. And
yeah.
I think
how was that?
I haven't seen it yet. So
okay.
I haven't seen Salt or Red either, but Jersey Girl to start my single parent with kids.
Collection.
Black Swan.
Yeah, awesome.
I haven't seen it yet, though. I have to see
it. Oh, okay. You have to see that first.
Okay. Mostly Martha, again. It's the No Reservation is the Americanization version with what's-her-face, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Sure.
Mostly Martha is the original German version. Again, single parent and child kind of thing.
Huh.
Movie, How Do You Know, which is, as you know, Reese Witherspoon and Paul Rudd.
So good!
Yeah, I really like that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Monsoon Wedding.
Oh, man, haven't seen that in years. Okay.
Rear Window.
Oh, cool. Hitchcock, yeah.
Yep. Kites, some weird Bollywood action movie.
Okay.
You know awesome. That woman who was in that movie, that's Mexican movie that I lent you about? She was married to one brother and had the affair with the other brother. She's
in Isabel.
Yeah, it was...
That was quite a few years ago.
Yeah, the movie was like whatever, but the actress was really good.
Really smoking.
Vera Drake,
cool.
Which I love. Cachet, which is apparently with, I think it's Juliette Binoche and...
Okay.
And Jude Law, I think it is. Or maybe I'm getting it confused, but it's apparently a really good movie. Scott Pilgrim, I picked up. Martian Child, which is John Cusack. Again, single parent with child movie.
Okay.
Away From Her, which you and I and Elaine saw with Vanessa.
Excellent. And Sarah Polley, Canadian shout out.
There yes. And that movie is very accurate, I thought. Very good.
Yeah.
The Visitor.
The Visitor.
And I don't know, I don't think you've heard of The Visitor, but it's a really good movie about this guy, professor who sort of, you know, kind of lost his passion for his work and is near retirement, kind of coasting. And he goes to his apartment in New York that he just sort of goes to on occasion. He just has it. And finds that there's two squatters living in his apartment.
Okay.
And then through them, just getting to know them, just totally finds a passion. So it's really good. Richard Jenkins is the actor. He's like a character actor, and he was nominated.
Oh, he's good.
Yeah.
He was nominated at the Oscars.
For that movie.
That's the one.
Yes, that's the movie.
Right on.
It is so good.
Oh.
He is so good in it. Yeah.
Right on.
I Love You, Man.
Oh, yeah.
The Boys Are Back, which is with Clive Owen. Again, single father with two kids. See how I suddenly have this collection now?
Wow, I'm surprised how many there are.
Going the Distance, that's like with, what's her name? Drew Barrymore and Justin Long, like this long-distance relationship movie.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, I remember them being in a movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
Find Love, which is some sort of independent movie, which I thought was supposed to be like, Before Sunrise, which I know you love.
Love that movie.
No. But it was totally not that. At all. City Island, which had like Juliana Margulies in it and Andy Garcia.
Yes.
Supposed to be good. I mean, it looked, sounded good in the description.
I've heard about that, you know, just because people were kind of looking at her other work other than The Good Wife.
Right.
So that was one that was mentioned.
The Big Lebowski,
yep.
Which I have not seen. Wow. And I figure just everyone talks about it, so I better.
Oh, yeah. That's a good pickup. Yep.
What is it? Oh, Rushmore?
Still haven't seen that.
Oh, that's a good movie. Slumdog Millionaire?
Yeah.
Crazy Beautiful, which is like a Kristen Dunst movie, again with the great dimples. But it's like a teeny movie, but it's actually what I liked about it. It's a teenage movie kind of thing. But what I liked about it is that it's a drama, and it just shows like, you know, when you're young and you're in love and you just feel it's like the most important thing in your life, you know, like you just... Just the intensity of it is actually was I thought was well done. Out of Sight, George Clooney and Jennifer Lopez, one of the best movies ever.
One of the best movies ever. I agree.
I picked up Love and Other Drugs with Jake Gyllenhaal and Anne Hathaway, and it.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I
was nodding off there for a second.
Well, and surprisingly, given about all the nudity, it is actually kind of boring. And
well, I think that's what people were noticing, right? Because the nudity almost becomes a distraction, because that's what kind of Kev was talking
about. Yeah, and Kev's description of it is pretty apt.
Yeah.
Summer in Genoa, which is Colin Firth,
okay.
Single parent with two daughters.
Awesome.
Hope Davis is the wife and dies in a car accident, and then he takes the kids out for the summer in Italy. And it's actually it's a very quiet movie, and actually I kind of fell asleep during it, but it's actually really good. You know, so it's one of those slice of life movies. Like
yeah.
you enter their lives at a certain point and you leave it you know, and it's kind of interesting.
Cool.
Nice guy Johnny, which is like, what's his name? The guy who directed like the Brothers McMullen and you know him, like the guy, I forget his name now, but it's one of his movies. Hmm. It's not that great, yeah, but it's okay. Escapes me. Flipped, which is like a Rob Reiner movie, directed movie, which is actually, it's kind of cute. It's about two 12-year-olds, I guess, you know, just preteens, and just how they, and you know, this relationship they have is like, it's really cute. It's based in, like, set in the 50s or something, right?
Mm, so cool.
It's kind of cute. Love and Savagery, which is like a Canadian movie about this scientist and this woman who's going to be a nun, and they have this relationship. I saw like 20 minutes of it on the TV, and I thought, hey, there it is. I thought it was okay for the 20 minutes I watched. So I picked it up. Again, bar really low. The Maid, which is like an Eastern European movie. It's apparently really funny.
Yeah.
It's like this maid, she's fearful that she's going to lose her job to this younger maid or something, and does everything she can to sort of subversively like ruin her job or something, kind of thing.
I heard that was pretty good, actually. I read about that one.
Next up, Wonderland, starter for 10, just two independent movies. Summer Rain, which is like Antonio Banderas's, he directed it. It's like a summer in the 1970s in Spain, and I always like those kind of movies that take you into another world, kind of thing,
for sure.
And The Terminal with Tom Hanks, I thought it was kind of underrated. I thought it was it's a cute one. A Mighty Wind, which is good.
Yeah.
The Lemon Tree, which I saw the trailer for in front of a movie at the Hollywood years ago, and I thought that was really interesting. It's about some lemon tree it talks about sort of the difference between, you know, Israel and Palestine, kind of thing. So it's uses a lemon tree as a symbol for stuff. Ondine, which is like some sort of Colin Farrell movie and some sort of fantasy, and he meets this mysterious woman, blah, 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 blah. And then Bliss, which is, again, an Eastern, Turkish movie, I think it was.
Okay.
And about this young woman who gets actually assaulted, and because of the religious context, has to sort of be banished, and this guy was taking her away to kind of basically kill her, but he can't do it, and so they end up running away together and just going on this little sailing adventure kind of thing. It's actually a really funny and poignant movie, so I really enjoyed that one. So that was my many, many movies, and it took us a whole lot of time to go through them all, but...
No, we did it pretty briskly, though.
I try.
that was good.
But yeah, so you can tell, some of them is just because they were good movies and I kind of wanted them. And some of them I heard of the actress or the actor and thought, why not?
And you know what, though? Sometimes it's enough for one performance to get you through a movie if it's that good.
Yes, yeah.
Sometimes you don't even care if the rest of the movies... I mean, it's rare, but it does happen.
It does. And I've seen maybe 8 of them now, of the 45. And
it's pretty good.
And there's some of them actually... are surprisingly good. Like, better than I thought. And some of them were like, okay, what do you expect? 70% off. I picked it up, you know?
And that's the thing. Like, what a great way to discover lots of new movies. I mean, you got a whole variety of different types of movies
there. Want Teenage Love? I got it. Want Dance-Off movie? I got it. Want 70s in Spain? I got it. Got it all.
Single parent with kids?
Single parent with kids? I've got 10.
Lesbian love scenes? You got it.
I got it.
Well, that's good. I guess that's a good way to end it off.
Yes. I thought it was very varied today in our podcast. So.
Which is something to look forward to, because we're going to slightly alter our existence on Facebook.
Yes, yes. We're going... So all of the people who are in our Facebook group will get an email at some point. And we're going to ask you all to like our page eventually once we set it up. So
yeah, I think that's great.
It'll be easier way to inform people of what we're doing. And people else can sort of comment if they really want to. And
it won't feel like a club you have to join, because that's what the group thing was about. You know, it was just, I want to join that group. It's like, well, some people don't want that as part of their, what their info, like when they go to their pages and stuff. So this way it's a little more relaxed and but yet easier to get the info out, as you mentioned. So look forward to that.
Sounds good. So otherwise, other than that, you can find us on iTunes and the.matrix.com.
Yeah. And drop a line if you like what you hear or you don't like what you hear.
Yeah, if you give us some suggestions, if we talk too much or things are too long, you didn't care about any of the 45 movies I've talked about, that's all fair game. It's all good.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thanks for listening, and peace and love.
Talk to you guys later. Oh.